Welcome to the School of Batman, a podcast where we ask academics to help Batman fight crime using their research. I'm your host, Chris George, amateur scientist and professional Batman enthusiast. In today's episode, we'll be discussing the Riddler's Christmas surprise. We're pleased to be joined by Ariel Ouellette, who has a PhD from the University of Wisconsin-Madison in biological psychology. He has a degree from Oberlin College in Ohio in neuroscience and psychology with a minor in history, and has also studied how the immune system influences the brain at UCLA. He's currently at Iowa State trying to figure out how obesity affects our brains and how that can lead to problems in later life. So thanks for joining us, Aria. How are you today?
I'm quite delightful. How are you?
I'm having a great day so far. Thanks very much. I think we'll probably just jump in straight at the end, actually. Yeah, tell us a little bit about that, because the idea of how obesity affects brains is certainly not something I've come across before, and I imagine that's a fairly uncommon connection a lot of people will make. So yeah, tell us about that research.
Yeah, so to walk through it a little bit, basically with fat cells, as they get larger and larger, they require more energy. And to get that energy, the pancreas, which is part of the body you usually don't think of, has to produce more and more insulin. So this is a hormone that basically helps to get blood sugar normally up into, you know, say your muscles in order to move, but it's also really important for certain parts of your brain. Like say for instance, the front part of your brain, which is really important for higher order cognition, like say for example, trying to remember where your car keys are or driving or planning out your day. But it's also really important for forming new memories and trying to send those up into long-term storage. So as people have like pre-diabetes and type 2 diabetes and other problems related to obesity, they produce more and more of this insulin. And so over time, the body basically says, well, this is way too much. We're getting way too much blood sugar up into tissues. So we're just going to put the brakes on this. So the body kind of overcompensates, and this state called insulin resistance ends up leading to problems with frontal lobe function, forming new memories, being able to engage in these higher order cognitions. And over time, it's been shown that this increases the risk for Alzheimer's disease and other kinds of brain disorders later in life. So I try and figure out why in the world that happens.
Remarkable. Okay, can we just dig into some of those concepts a little bit more? So the fat cells get bigger, and cells demand energy from what we eat, and so the bigger the cell, the more energy is required. That was the starting point, right?
That's a basic premise.
Okay, and so how does that relate to the insulin production and the blood sugar? What's going on there?
Within all of the cells in our muscles, but only selectively in certain brain cells in certain areas that I mentioned. So insulin binds in sort of a lock and key fashion to these other chemicals on the surface of the cell called receptors. And so because of that, there are a complex series of events that chemically happen that basically say, hey, blood sugar, come on into the cell and, you know, help to produce energy. And blood sugar says, well, you know, don't mind if I do. So the problem ends up being that if this happens too much, or you get too much blood sugar up into cells, that can actually be toxic. And so the body tries to, again, put the brakes on that eventually, but it overcompensates, and it ends up being then that the cells receive too little energy, and so they eventually starve and they eventually die.
Right, and I guess the brain is a huge energy hog, which is something I've only learned fairly recently, right? So this can be extremely problematic.
Yeah.
Okay, so is this... did you say insulin resistance?
Yeah, insulin resistance is the term.
Yeah, is that a kind of a uniform experience of this type of state, or is that something that only happens in rare occurrences? Or
This is something that increasingly in Western countries is very problematic. So, for example, by the time people get to be 60-65 over in the UK, over in the States, for example, about 40-60% of people actually have insulin resistance, and so, you know, their brains are just much less efficient with being able to, you know, just carry on, you know, day-to-day kinds of thinking. And yeah, so these particular individuals are just more prone to developing dementia, and dementia kind of sucks. So this is actually a really widespread problem.
And is the idea behind your research to try and understand where that overcompensation comes from and how that can be better regulated?
Yeah, so trying to figure out why certain parts of the brain are dysfunctioning, certain kinds of underlying kind of chemical mechanisms to say, well, so, you know, we know that the route of why this is happening, but, you know, is it because the actual function of that area is dysregulated? Is it because it changes the structure of the brain? Is it because it changes blood flow? A whole bunch of other things along those lines, so we can kind of more precisely understand, you know, why ultimately we get these problems, you know, with thinking. And then the idea is, if we can more narrowly understand the problem, we can kind of figure out a more precise solution to it.
And how have your studies in psychology influenced your work on the brain? Is there much of a crossover there?
Well, I think so, yeah. I mean, I think that biology influences behavior. So some people have a larger frontal lobe than others, and they're perhaps just better at doing crossword puzzles or other things. Some people just have a different chemical profile. And so if we understand, not just on an individual basis, but also just like, you know, certain groups of people, for example, or population as a whole, you can really begin to understand, you know, why some people have really good memories versus those who don't, or why some people are great at planning ahead and, you know, being able to think big thoughts, whereas other people, maybe myself included, I don't know, have issues with that. And that can impact human health, which is important.
And what's life like on a day-to-day in your, do you work in a lab? Do you work with a team? What's the kind of functions that you perform?
So nowadays, 80% of what we do is we're sort of beneficial data parasites. So there's an episode of Futurama in which Fry eats, I want to say it was like a random sandwich at a space truck stop, and he gets infested.
An egg sandwich, yeah.
Yeah, the egg sandwich, yeah. And so he gets infested with worms, but the worms actually help him think better and do things better. And so I feel like, at least for science, we're sort of like that, where we have all of these big ideas for how, you know, different parts of our physiology affect our brains. And so we can kind of cobble together data from, instead of, you know, dozens or hundreds of people, thousands of people. And we can look at how these different systems influence the brain. And, you know, it's really cool. And so we do a lot of kinds of correlational kinds of analyses that way. We've also got a segment of our lab where we do clinical trials. So say we take people who are lean versus people who are obese, and, you know, have them exercise or have them, you know, eat slightly less, and we observe, you know, what happens to the brain. So we try and kind of do more exploration, but we also try and, you know, directly test, you know, what happens when we change a certain state, and if we, you know, see something that happens in the brain.
Great. So I think it's probably time we move on to your story now, and we look at your Batman story. So before we start, we like to ask our guests if they've chosen an actor to represent their Batman. Have you chosen one for today?
Kevin Conroy.
Right, the voice of Batman, in my opinion. Glad you've chosen Kevin. Let's dig into your story. Started on a Sunday, snow has taken hold of Gotham and the streets bustle with holiday shoppers as it's the week before Christmas, when suddenly, the electronic billboards crackle in unison, interrupting their normal programming as the face of the Riddler lights up the night. Laying out his plans for an ominous Christmas Day surprise, Batman has 7 days to avert catastrophe by solving a chain of some of the most fiendishly cerebral puzzles he's ever faced. How can he possibly maintain the required intensity for a whole week? Batman's got himself into a pretty difficult situation here. He's a man who's kind of accustomed to a lack of sleep. He doesn't get a lot of rest. People keep him busy. But this is a step up. This is something he's never really faced before. He's got 7 days of very difficult, very intellectually demanding puzzles to try and unpick to solve this problem. How could your work help him? How could this be approached?
Great question. So he has to maintain concentration for a long period of time, and he needs to have really sustained attention, lots of paying attention to details, things like that. So the fun thing is, I've talked about how, this state of insulin resistance is related to the brain performing less well. So it ends up being that if you supply more insulin to the brain, it doesn't actually affect your body too much, but it can really help to improve brain function. And so there have been several studies where, this is gonna sound kind of crazy, but bear with me, it actually, there's science behind it. So you can take a squirt bottle, right? And that squirt bottle can be filled up with insulin. And you can take that particular squirt bottle, stick it up your nose, and spray it. How does this get through to your brain? Well, there is a porous part of, some of your tissue membranes up in your nose that takes chemicals directly into the brain without having to inject it there or anything else like that. So you can take this relatively simple approach to, say, make sure that those brain areas get enough glucose, they get enough blood sugar so that you can constantly perform these precise and very complicated calculations. Because if it's the Riddler, it's going to be really complicated.
Right, okay, so is there, I'm not 100% sure how to phrase this, but with intense concentration or working on difficult challenges, is there a physiological difference between an idling brain? Does it demand more energy? Does it demand more resources? Is there any difference there?
Good question. So the idling brain consumes a lot of energy because we're very visual creatures, and so the back of the brain, what's called the occipital lobe, consumes a huge amount of energy just to, produce the real-time pictures that we're viewing. We're constantly thinking about the environment and ourselves. But when we have a task at hand that we really need to focus on, it ends up being that kind of the difference from baseline is less than you'd think. It's about maybe a 5-10% increase or so in the amount of activity that actually occurs in that area. Really different from a baseline per se. But you definitely need to nudge it in the right direction because, after a while, most people will get bored. Well, I suppose except for Batman, he's, very focused at the task at hand.
Right. So without this booster spray, this kind of nasal spray, could you achieve similar results through more, I don't want to say natural, but through more natural means? Is there a way you could kind of hack your brain function by optimum nutrition or sleep and get comparable results to how these brain sprays might work? Or is this something which is over and above the standard operations of the body?
Well, sure. So the nasal spray would sort of be like a nitrous boost, for lack of a better description, which is great. But yeah, there are all sorts of different so-called more natural ways to do it. So for context, I used to be about 250, 260 pounds. So when I talk about, obesity and problems with the brain, I can speak from personal experience, and it's a huge problem in Western countries where, it's a problem in need of solutions as opposed to figuring out why we have the problem in the first place. So, even if you're, obese, for example, if you, say, are more active, not like going to the gym necessarily, but just more moderate exercise, say, for example, 3 times a week for at least 30 minutes on a given day, where moderate walking, for instance, or jogging, things of that nature, that can actually improve how your body deals with insulin and also how your brain deals with insulin. It makes it more efficient and better. And by that token, you aren't necessarily losing weight, but that activity is kind of It's complicated, but that activity basically helps to improve that regulation. If you lose weight, you can have a similar kind of a benefit because rather than, you know, you becoming insulin resistant, then that particular, you know, system is much more efficient and much less likely to fail. But you also mentioned sleep, which is really important because, you know, if you consistently get, say, less than 7 hours, or for me, 6.5 hours or something like that, over time, that's actually going to, you know, really impact the ability for, you know, your brain to sop up that hormone to, you know, use as blood sugar. Another one that I can think of is if you're the type of person that chronically just feels stressed all the time, like me, that can also, you know, impact how, you know, this hormone is doing things. And so sometimes like relaxation or just kind of better figuring out your problems can also, you know, hack the system as well. And so, you know, there's a lot of different things that that people can do depending on where they're at in life.
I'm always interested when we can seemingly do things to improve body function. But with talking about this, it seems less like it's a hack over and above the normal body function, but more of a returning of body function to the norm, like an optimal functioning, exercising human being. These kind of insulin boosters seem to be approximating some of those benefits more. So is it more the case that we're trying to compensate with negative lifestyle and things like that? Or is this genuinely a boost over and above what the body would do even in optimal conditions?
I think actually it can be both. So even if you take people, you know, who, I'm going to use some colloquialisms here, but, you know, who eat right and who exercise all the time and so on and so forth, which, let's be honest, like maybe 5% of, at least 5% of Americans, you know, do that or so. But, you know, people who are optimally functioning with this, you know, particular nasal spray, yeah, it would actually improve things even above and beyond what they can do. But for, frankly, the rest of us, yeah, it can help us to, you know, achieve, you know, more optimal function or get closer to whatever normal is. So, yeah, honestly, I would say it can be both.
Right. And this may be a question that there is no answer to, but given that optimal kind of base functioning of a human, and this can take them above and beyond that, why do you think that there is the capability to be able to go above and beyond that for something that's, you know, not a sickness or something like that? We're not curing it through medicine. We're just improving existing functionality.
So there are individual differences in my brain, your brain, you know, things like that. But I think because of our physiology and because of the way our brains are wired, so I'm from Los Angeles originally, where we have, you know, 7 lanes of traffic. So I would say sort of normal traffic is, you know, occupying 3 or 4 lanes of that, but our brains are capable of 7 lanes of traffic. So it ends up being that, you know, with that biological boost, that we can, you know, kind of optimize things. And so it will vary depending on this particular person or that particular person, but in a lot of ways, we, you know, have sort of a baseline sense of function, but we can kind of go above and beyond that. And again, depending on the person, that can be a little or that can be a lot.
Right. I think moving on to some of the wider ramifications of your research, this seems like such an incredible benefit without expensive drug research or any particularly expensive methods of enacting this. Why do you think, on a societal level, these benefits haven't come through as much as, say, heart health or something like that? Is that a PR problem? Is that a science problem? What do you think?
I think it's partly, well, it's a combination of a lot of different things. So with heart health, that is, you know, something that very suddenly happens for a lot of people, and that affects a lot of people. Problems with your brain, I think, are more subtle. I mean, Alzheimer's definitely isn't, but it's the case that, you know, when somebody has a heart attack, you know, that's very sudden, and you can kind of look at a sort of a root cause. with the brain, it's so much more difficult trying to figure out what goes wrong, and so it's more mysterious, I guess, and so that might be part of the issue. It used to be, I think, in the past, there was a PR problem because we either didn't have a lot of advocates for the disease, or, you know, we didn't know what was going on. But, you know, very recently, the Alzheimer's Association and other organizations have at least lobbied the American Congress to allocate a lot more money to that research, and there's a lot more focus on it. But yeah, I think also, you know, part of the underlying issue is we think of these brain diseases as something largely that happens, you know, later in life. And, you know, toward the end of life, we basically say, well, so, you know, old people, things are going to fall apart, whatever. But it is the case with the system that I've been talking about that, like, right now, how our brain functions is partly dependent on, you know, what insulin is doing, how efficient it is. And so if you directly improve that right now, you would get a benefit to that right now. And so what I think, at least sort of my little subfield, needs to, you know, concentrate on more is, you know, selling that and being able to say, you know, here's your brain, you could improve your brain in this way, and it's not going to have, you know, problems with, you know, your body and regulating blood sugar, even if you have, like, type 2 diabetes. So I think it's just, yeah, trying to sell what at first seems like a crazy concept as something that could be, you know, practical.
So this system and these systems that we've been talking about and how they influence Alzheimer's and brain function, do they have any influence on any other potential kind of diseases or any other syndromes or ramifications or anything like that?
So most of my research has focused on insulin resistance and Alzheimer's disease. So there we know, for example, that it seems to affect a part of the brain called the hippocampus for generating new memories. But for some recent research that we've done, it also seems to be, or at least that system seems to be, important for Parkinson's disease. So for a brief rundown of that, Parkinson's, you know, is normally characterized by motor tremors and problems with movement in general. But I think one thing that people don't realize is that about a third of individuals who get diagnosed with Parkinson's have major cognitive problems. And so what we've found is having these issues with insulin resistance or just the system in general seems to affect a completely different part of the brain called the striatum, which is involved with initiating not just motor movement or the motivation to move your body, but it's also involved with the motivation to move your mind. Which sounds a little cerebral, but it's important for just motivation in general. And so we found in the disease that this system I've been talking about related to insulin seems to be completely just botched. Because a kind of chemical that is produced by this brain area, you know, normally is regulated by this system. But for whatever reason, in Parkinson's, it's completely offline. And it's the case also that when we look at how, you know, more insulin is beneficial for the brain, it seems to be related to, you know, smaller brain cells, not in areas that are important for Alzheimer's, like the hippocampus and the frontal lobe, but it seems more important for areas that are related to planning motor movement, actually executing motor movement. So I guess, like, the big takeaway is basically insulin is really cool because it seems to be beneficial for a number of different processes, and it seems to kind of selectively go awry in these seemingly totally different neurological disorders like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's.
Yeah, so if you were going to crystallize in a statement, things that our listeners could take away, what would you do in an advocacy basis to help people improve their brain function? And as people are obviously living longer, and I personally believe this kind of thing is going to become more and more relevant in society as societies do end up living longer, what would you say to them as advice?
You can improve your brain here and now. You can either do it with a nitrous boost, like squirting insulin up into your nose and into your brain, or you can get better sleep, eat slightly better, do slightly more activity, and you may not lose weight, you, I don't know, may not feel better, but your brain actually will function better. And so if you want to be able to remember better or think complex thoughts better, you know, consider that what happens to your body can affect your brain.
So the day is saved. Even with a mind like Batman operating at 100%, there's still a nitrous boost that can help him over the edge and solve the Riddler's challenges. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Ariel for joining us.
Thanks for having me. That was a lot of fun.
We will see you on the next episode. If you'd like to be a future guest on the podcast, please email us at info@figshare.com. And you can find us on Twitter at School of Batman.